Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the ICICI Prudential Life Insurance Company Limited Quarter One FY 2020 Earnings Conference Call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. N.S. Kannan, MD and CEO, ICICI Prudential Life. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Kannan.
Thank you. Good evening and welcome to the results call of ICICI Prudential Life Insurance Company for the quarter ended June 30th, 2019. I have with me here my colleagues, Puneet Nanda, our Deputy Managing Director, and Satyan Jambunathan, our Chief Financial Officer, as also some of my other colleagues. At the outset, I would like to mention a couple of developments during the quarter for the company. Last week, as several of you will be aware, we had our annual general meeting in Mumbai. All the items included in the notice for members have been duly approved by the shareholders of the company. The standard items included the appointment of four directors, Mr. Anup Bagchi, Mr. Sandeep Batra, both nominated by ICICI Bank, Mr. Raghunath Hariharan, nominated by Prudential, and Ms. Vibha Paul Rishi, an independent director. We also had items related to the revision in the remuneration of full-time directors and profit-linked commission paid to the independent directors. Approval was also granted by the shareholders for our chairman, Mr. Ramachandran, to continue as an independent director on attaining the age of 75. Further, an amendment to the definition of exercise period under the company's employee stock option scheme, restricting it to 5 years instead of 10 years from the date of vesting, was approved to align the interest of the shareholders and employees even more closely. During the quarter, we also hosted ThinkTech, an event to showcase our technology capabilities to the analysts. Over the past year, across our various interactions at the quarterly calls, conferences, and investor meets, we have discussed at length our business performance. While business performance is the final outcome, we believe that there are some key business enablers which ensure the long-term sustainability of the business. Technology is one of those enablers. In all our interactions, we have given you some glimpses of our technology initiatives, but we have never had a comprehensive discussion in the past focused only on this topic. That was the genesis of creating the technology event, where our attempt was to demonstrate our overall approach to technology, the journey so far, our digital preparedness, new initiatives in progress, and also give an experience of the consumer and distributor-oriented tools firsthand. Just to summarize on the ThinkTech event, we at ICICI Prudential have undergone a profound digital transformation over the past few years. Our approach has been to keep modernizing the operating platforms and to continuously enhance our digital capabilities to keep in tune with the rapidly evolving ecosystem. Our approach to technology and some of the initiatives are given in the later part of our results presentation, which has been uploaded. Moving on to the regulatory update during the quarter, IRDA had released the new regulations for life insurance products. There are some changes to guidelines across product categories and more specifically on pension products. While there are some additional opportunities for companies like us, we believe that none of the changes are disruptive in nature. Now, moving on, I will now talk about the key highlights of our performance for the quarter ended June 30th, 2019, along with our key strategic imperatives. We have put up the results presentation, as I said, on our website. You can refer to it as we walk through our performance. After my remarks, Satyan will discuss the performance in greater detail. At the end, Puneet, Satyan, and I will be happy to take any questions that you may have. During the last results call, we had articulated our aspiration to double our financial year 2019 value of new business VNB in  3 to 4 years. Our VNB grew by 27% to 3.09 billion rupees in Q1 of this financial year as compared to 2.44 billion rupees for the same period in the last financial year. This growth has been predominantly achieved through the growth in the protection business. Our VNB margin for the quarter was 21% as compared to 17% for the whole of last financial year 2019. While this is the first quarter result immediately after we made our aspiration public, the early results give us the confidence that we have started on our aspirational path in the right earnest. As I mentioned in the previous calls, our 4P strategic elements, that is the premium growth, protection business growth, persistency improvement and productivity improvement, continue to guide us towards our objective of growing the absolute value of new business. We had also articulated our agenda for each of these strategic elements in the last call. On the first P of premium growth, our annualized premium equivalent APE for Q1 financial year 2020 was 14.7 billion rupees, a growth rate of about 5% as compared to a flat APE for the last financial year. You would recall that starting from the third quarter of the last financial year, we have put in place various initiatives such as engagement with the key distributors serving affluent customers and distribution and product initiative to widen our customer base. Within the product initiatives, we have talked about diversifying our product mix. For the first quarter of the current financial year, within savings category, linked product mix was about 71% of our APE as compared to 80% in the last fiscal year. Our non-linked saving mix has increased to 14% from 11% earlier. Similarly, on distribution channel diversification, non-bank assurance channels contributed 48% of our Q1 financial year 2020 APE as compared to 44% in the last financial year. Even as we stayed course on these initiatives, and some of them are being undertaken as we speak, we have registered a positive year-on-year growth rate for 8 months in a row. We will endeavor to move this forward. On the second P of protection business growth, we continue to make significant progress. With our focus on retail business and building partnerships, our protection APE for the first quarter of this financial year grew by 88% on a year-on-year basis. With an APE of 2.14 billion rupees, protection accounted for 14.6% of the quarter APE. This growth was led by both retail and group protection businesses, and the retail protection continues to dominate the protection mix. On the third P of persistency, this metric continues to be a key measure of our business quality. Our early period persistency, excluding single premium, was at 84.4%. We continue to focus on improving the 13th month persistency by encouraging our customers to stay invested longer, in line with our endeavor to reflect the improvement seen in the 13 month cohort to longer durations. Our persistency of longer durations have improved, specifically the 49th month persistency, which had improved to 64.2% at the end of June 2019. Coming to the fourth P of productivity improvement, we will continue to leverage technology to improve cost ratios. However, as we continue our focus on protection, we are also conscious that we will have to invest in this segment. Our cost to TWRP ratio was lower at 17% for the first quarter financial year 2020 as compared to 17.5% for the corresponding quarter last financial year. Within this, the cost to TWRP ratio for the savings business has significantly improved to 11.3% as against 13.7% for the first quarter of the last financial year. So as I mentioned earlier, the outcome of the our focus on these four P's has resulted in our VNB, value of new business, for the first quarter of financial year 2020 of 3.09 billion rupees, a growth rate of about 27% over the same period last year. The VNB margin for the first quarter of the current year is 21% as compared to 17% for the whole of the last financial year. We would continue to focus on expanding the absolute value of new business going forward. I thank you for your attention, and I now hand over the call to Satyan to discuss the results in a greater detail.
Thank you, Kannan. Good evening, everyone. Our primary focus continues to be to grow the absolute value of new business. Through the 4P strategy of premium growth, protection business growth, persistency improvement, and productivity improvement. On the premium growth side, retail business continues to dominate our new business, contributing about 90% of the new business APE for the quarter. Overall APE growth for Q1 20 was about 5%. As we look at our growth across product categories, our focus areas, that is the protection and annuity segments, continued to grow well. The annuity segment registered a growth rate of more than 70% for Q1 FY20. While unit-linked products continue to be a mainstay category within savings, its contribution to overall APE has decreased from 80% in financial year 19 to 71% in Q1 20, providing us with further diversification in the product mix. On the distribution channels, we have continued to invest across channels such as agency, bank assurance, proprietary sales force, corporate agents and brokers, including web aggregators. We have a well-diversified distribution mix with non-bank channels contributing about 48% of our Q1 APE as compared to 44% for full year last year. The growth in the group business APE has been primarily driven by protection business. On our second element of protection, with an APE of 2.14 billion rupees for Q1 20, protection growth continued to be robust and consistent. For Q1 20, protection APE grew 88%, resulting in protection becoming 14.6% of the APE for the quarter. Within this, both the retail and the group protection continue to grow strongly. The third element of persistency. While we have seen a gradual improvement in persistency across the buckets, 13-month persistency was stable at 84.4. 49th month persistency has improved further to 64.2. While persistency rates continue to be one of the best in the industry, we would continue to focus on improving these persistency rates further. From a profitability perspective, our persistency experience continues to be better than the assumptions factored in both the VNB and the EV calculation. On cost ratios, improving productivity within all parts of the organization from sales to service has resulted in our cost ratios coming down over the years. As we redouble our focus on protection, we are also conscious we will have to invest in this segment. Our cost to TWRP ratio was 17% for Q1 compared to 17.5% for the same period last year. Within this, savings cost to TWRP was 11.3% compared to 13.7% for Q1 FY19. The overall outcome of focusing on these four P's has resulted in the VNB of 3.09 billion for Q1 FY20, a growth rate of 27% over the same period last year. The VNB margin was 21% as compared to 17% for financial year 2019. Profit after tax for Q1 FY20 was 2.85 billion rupees as compared to 2.82 billion for Q1 FY19. Our solvency ratio continues to be strong at 217%. The AUM was more than 1.64 trillion rupees at June 30, 2019. Our investment philosophy continues to be aimed at ensuring consistent, stable and better risk-adjusted performance over the long term to policyholders. In this context, I would like to highlight that since the inception of our company, none of our fixed income investments has defaulted. Before I conclude, as Kannan highlighted, we hosted a Think Tech event to showcase our digital journey and capabilities. We demonstrated some of the best-in-class consumer and distributor-oriented tools. We highlighted various initiatives across the policy lifecycle, from marketing and lead generation to pre-sales enablers, onboarding and issuance process, customer service including claims, integration capability with partners, as well as data analytics. While the detailed presentation is available on our website and on the exchanges, we have given some of the initiatives in the later part of our results presentation. To summarize, we continue to monitor ourselves on the 4P framework of premium growth, protection business growth, persistency and productivity improvement. Our performance on these dimensions is what we expect to feed into our VNB growth over time. Thank you, and we are now happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. We would now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may please press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, We'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Prakash Kapadia from Anived PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Congrats on the VNB growth. So if I look at, you know, our AP base of last year, next 6 months we still have a, you know, flattish to negative AP kind of this thing in the base. So what kind of AP growth are we aiming in the near term?
Prakash, if you look at the last year's trajectory as well, you will find that Q2 in terms of APE growth was a step up pickup over Q1. While the growth rate for Q1 was negative, growth rate for Q2 last year was 6%. So as we go through this quarter and the future quarters as well, like Kannan described, the endeavor is to keep up the positive trajectory on growth that we have had. But we should keep in mind that last year Q2 was a big step up over Q1. Overall, from a going forward perspective, we are far more comfortable articulating the aspiration on VNB growth, not just about one dimension, which is APE growth. Like we said before, our objective is to double our FY19 VNB over a 3 to 4 year period, which essentially means that over this period, we will have to grow the VNB by anywhere between 19 to 25% per annum. So in that context, if we look at the first quarter VNB growth of 27%, we think at least we have made a fair start to our aspiration over the next 3 to 4 years.
Right. And, you know, what will it take for us to, you know, say double VNB in 3 years instead of 4? Is it just a higher protection contribution?
Clearly, that is
currently, and we see a dramatic change, or are there other plans also to get to 3 years doubling VNB instead of 4?
Sure. Prakash, like we have said before, I don't think it will happen through one dimension. It will have to be the combination of the 4 P's that we spoke about. Premium growth is an important lever. Protection growth faster than the rest of the business is another very important lever. Persistency and productivity will also be very, very important in this journey of growing the VNB.
Okay. And, you know, in terms of the 3 or 4 initiatives which we had highlighted last year of targeting the mass customer, enhancing distribution, and, you know, focus on pension and annuity products. So when do we see, you know, some of these articulating to higher premium growth? Because, you know, after a while, premium or APE growth has to, you know, be much higher than what it is.
Yeah, I agree. This is Kannan here. Puneet can supplement me on some of the initiatives you mentioned. We have indeed taken a lot of steps towards those initiatives, including granularization of our business over the past several months. You talked about pension and annuity. Clearly, that is one of the key focus areas. There you can see our success in terms of a 70% growth year-on-year of our annuity business for the first quarter of this year compared to the first quarter of the last financial year. That is one of the key indicators. We have also given product mix. If I remember, on slide number 13, we have given our product mix. There you could see that on the PAR business, 10% kind of a product mix we have been able to achieve. You know, as a consequence of these two things I talked about, you have seen diversification of product mix into 71% of ULIP, combined with the huge growth in protection we have seen, that's about 14.6%. So I think some of the steps we have taken in terms of diversification in the product mix have started coming through already. The growth in pension and annuity business has started coming through already. And I'll ask Puneet to supplement the other aspects of growth which we have articulated in the past.
You know, as we said, the biggest challenge for us was that the most affluent segment, we were not seeing them respond the way they used to respond, and hence the idea was to diversify. Now, how will that diversification happen? It will happen through diversification in channels. It will happen through diversification in customers, which will finally translate into different products. And that is what exactly, as Karan said, we have been able to see some success. I would say it is still early days, but a couple of quarters have passed. So the early success is that both product mix and channel mix have diversified. Within product mix, both savings mix and the protection to saving mix has also diversified. So I think these are encouraging trends. All of this has to finally translate into, as we've repeatedly said, into higher VNB growth, which is the number that we have already articulated, and that is the number that all of us are targeting.
Understood. That is very helpful. Thank you and all the best. I'll come back if I have more questions.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that management is able to address questions from all the participants in the conference, we would request all the participants to limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we request you to rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Suresh Ganpati from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Kannan and Satyan. I have questions for both of you. First is, one of your competitors, of course, has been aggressively pushing these non-par guaranteed return products. So I just wanted to know, where does iPRU fit in terms of its strategy in pushing such products, the market for such products? And to Satyan specifically, you know, again, the competitor clearly says that despite not having a pretty deep bond market per se, we can have a fully hedgeable protection component, or in that sense, we can manage the risk so well that there would not be any interest rate risk whatsoever by having swap mechanisms or whatever mechanisms which we can have to manage the risk in that product. Is it really doable? Is it really achievable? Just wanted your views on that.
Yeah, so let me start, Suresh, with your first response to your first question, Kannan here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, I cannot comment on the other products and other competitors and the way they are managing. I cannot comment on it. However, our philosophy, as we have articulated as a part of our presentation, continues to be that if we want to give a customer-centric product, at the same time, we want to, one of the key four P's for us is the persistency improvement. Those two become the guardrails in terms of how we want to run the business. So within those kind of boundaries, the way we have tried to operate our business is to relatively have a minimal kind of a shock in the balance sheet, whether it is on the liability side or on the asset side. That's why Satyan articulated in his opening remarks our philosophy in terms of the investments on the asset side. Despite the various volatility and happenings in the financial services sector, our asset portfolio, especially the credit side of the asset portfolio, has held up really well, and till now we have had zero NPAs since the inception of the company. Similarly, on the liabilities, our own focus has been that whatever we think we can manage from a hedging perspective, we are comfortable to roll it out. But if we have some, you know, issues, or if you have to take some big calls in terms of the liability, especially in the long term, we would rather stay away from this. This is our current position.
I want to interrupt here for a second, because when we had met Sandeep Bakshi, he very clearly said is that as a strategy, the bank just doesn't believe in selling a lot of par and non-par products, mainly because of the low level of transparency that exists in some of these products. So he has been of the view that whatever is easier to sell and the customers can understand, we want to do something which is more customer friendly. So would that not inhibit your ability to push some of these products, say par or non-par?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's a very good question, because, you know, in terms of our product philosophy, people have asked me this question. So I will sort of segregate among the traditional products. I will segregate it between a par product and a non-par product to start with in terms of response to your question.
Yeah.
On the par product, yes, the surrender penalties are very high for a discontinuing customer. There is it's very clear. Even in the new IRDA regulations, there have not been any significant changes made in terms of increasing the surrender value. So it pretty much remains the way it has been. The issue with us has been that if we are selling this product to the customer, you better be very sure about the persistency in this business, because a discontinuing customer, lapsing customer, pretty much loses very significant part of the premium. That has been one of the objections we have had. But the good news is that over a period of time, we have eliminated or at least reduced the possible customer issues in this product by A, producing a return of about 7% per annum over a long period of time, and B, improving the 13-month persistency close to 90% levels. So given that these two we have been able to achieve, it becomes a good product from a customer perspective if sold properly. So that has been the sort of a guiding. But having said that, we have left it to the distribution in terms of the customer profile they have to be able to push this product. So that has been the philosophy I just wanted to articulate clearly on the PAR side. On the non-PAR side, yes, we do sell non-PAR products. We do have very minimal guarantees. The question becomes in the non-PAR product, the level of guarantees. And especially when the level of guarantees is high, coupled with the fact that even the future premiums will have to be guaranteed for a longer period of time, we need to pause to think to see whether that is within our risk appetite. So the current call is that on the non-PAR side, you know, high guarantee business, especially on the premiums to be received over a few decades, is something which we would like to be very careful. So that is where our liability side risk comes into being. So that has been the philosophy. I just wanted to be very clear on how we want to run the business.
Okay, fine. And Satyan, on the interest rate risk in some of these products?
And if you want to articulate something beyond that, then Satyan can take that second question.
So, if you look at the global experience of where insurance companies have prospered and where life insurance companies have failed, globally, life insurance companies have typically failed only where interest rate risk is not managed or credit risk is not managed.
Yeah.
Typically, the mortality and morbidity side globally is well managed. There is less of an issue. And honestly, on the mortality side, there are internal hedges available in the product portfolio across annuities, life products, etc. So, you know, all of us look at portfolio hedging, but that is the kind of way we look at it. The interest rate is something which is obviously a function of not just where we are today, also a very strong call on where we will be, not just tomorrow, over several years. And that is where, honestly, the issue arises. If I look at what the distribution wants, obviously distribution wants products where there are high level of guarantees, because that is easier to sell. But as a company, we have consistently taken the call that, we are willing to take market risk, but unwilling to take balance sheet risk. And which is why, whether it's on interest rate side or on credit risk side, to be honest, and I want to bring both into the picture, we have demonstrated that we don't do it. And that is also one of the reasons, as you've seen, even on the credit portfolio, we have not had any issue whatsoever. It's a pristine portfolio. It's a similar approach on the interest rate side. And, to be very honest, different people have different philosophies. All I can say is we are very simple and transparent, and we don't have any secret sauce.
Okay, sure. Okay.
And also the last point I want to say is that having carefully navigated the organization into a high level of persistency and having made it a part of the KPI for our own sales management team as well as to our distributors in terms of qualifications for various activities we do, we don't want to take a step back on that, because that I think is very relevant from the long-term business point of view. So I think that also sort of becomes a boundary. I have to assume that any product we sell will have topmost persistency in the industry. So then when you put that in the equation, then some of these may not be doable.
Sure. And on the interest rate risk, if Satyam can answer that, the balance sheet management.
I think broadly Puneet addressed it. All I can say in answer to your question on how practical it is, the market better than I do.
Come on, Satyan, you can be frank enough and say whether it is doable or not.
No, but seriously, we don't want to comment on others' businesses. We just wanted to, focus on our risk appetite and, our philosophy at this point of time. I thought, we should be frank to articulate.
Okay, sure. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Suresh. Thanks for joining.
Yeah.
Thank you. We move to the next question, which is from the line of Adarsh P. from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. First question is relating to the protection business growth. Can you break that up into term life, credit life, and that group insurance?
Adesh, we have not given the split of the protection business during the quarter, but I can confirm to you that the growth has been consistent across all segments. In fact, the retail protection growth has been faster ahead of the rest.
Okay, and I just wanted to check, you know, I don't see a seasonality in your protection mix last year, which means 1Q had anything more than what you did in the full year. So is that a safe assumption for this quarter? There's no, you know, this is a retail business, so unlikely to have any material, you know, bunching up of business.
In the normal course, there should not be. But all said and done, even if you look at last year, my first two quarters on protection were actually slower. The last two quarters picked up steam. And normally because we run our performance cycles also to financial year, you will see some seasonality. I don't think it will be completely devoid, but you're right. I don't think the protection business will be anywhere as seasonal as the savings business.
Understood. And second question, you know, we've even both margins. So one is I see a persistency. You've reported in the FY19 results, the RF, you know, 11-month number, and this quarter you've given your 19 full-year persistency. So there is a certain dip in the 13th and 25th month relative to the 11-month number and also compared to the FY18 number, right? And then the 36th month and, you know, that kind of catches up. So what do we read? And then this is not like a blip. It's like 150 basis point kind of drop in persistency in 19 versus 18 if I take the full year FY19 trend.
They're slightly different cohorts. There's a 1 month apart in terms of cohort, which have slightly different curing period as well. That's why you see that difference, Adesh.
No, but the basic point is then when I look at FY19, because when we spoke or when we would have interacted basis the last disclosures, we would have looked at the FY, you know, the 11 month compared to FY18.
So let me just
a stable persistency trend. So
yeah,
now
let me just clarify this. When we say 11 month, it is rolling 12 months up to February. When I'm saying 12 months, it is rolling 12 months up to March. So last March has gone out of base and replaced by the new March, which has got a shorter period for premium payment. That is the typical trend that you see.
No, but the FY18 and now the FY19 numbers are more comparable, and that does suggest some dip in persistency in the first 2 years. So is that a fair conclusion to have? Or
there's no noticeable change. Persistency has been fairly stable. Early period is probably slightly below what it was at a comparable period, but later period persistency has improved. As you go through the rest of the year as well, this was true last year as well, if you would have noticed. In the first two quarters, persistency was a little weaker. Then in the last quarter, we picked up again. At least we are not seeing any big concerns from a persistency trend perspective.
Yeah, we are not seeing any, cause for concern at all, because going by the last year trends, going by the conversations we have with the customers and the distribution, we expect at this stage that it will pick up during the year. So that is one. And B, if you look at the assumptions wise, what we have articulated it in the past. We are at the early period persistency of about 82.5% in our assumptions. So we are doing well above the assumptions. So both ways, we don't have any problem. And as you have seen, the later period persistencies are actually getting better. So these three combined, do not give us any problems in terms of, the persistency going forward as well.
And last question is cost ratio for the saving business. It's dipped. So last year we did have a problem with VNB margins on the saving business. Given that till now the ULIP and the saving AP growth is muted, but you're able to control cost ratio. Just wanted to understand, the savings VNB margin, right? The trajectory. We had a dip last year. given that that ratio of cost ratios have improved, should one expect that even if volumes don't pick up on savings APE, you could broadly have flat, you could maintain VNB margins or improve?
You're right, Adesh. That is the objective. In fact, if you look at the actual trajectory, Q1 cost ratios were lower. As we normally do, early part of the year, we are basing our margin on expense forecast for the full year. We are not yet expecting any improvements in the margin implied in the expense ratios compared to last year yet, in spite of the first quarter improvement in ratios being there.
And through the last year also, we have taken several steps towards our fixed expenses, which is also bearing fruit today in terms of our cost ratios.
So just more like a crude question, how much, like if savings APE is like flattish for this year, I just want to understand, how much of cost growth you can afford to have on the firm level, right? Like this year, I think this quarter is about 8-9% kind of cost growth, OPEX growth. What's the number which you can still do because, you know, you can absorb some cost in higher, you know, protection growth that you are having? So broadly, if you can kind of highlight.
Adesh, I don't think it will be a straight linear number there because it will also be a function of product mix within that, how much of linked I do, how much of par I do. But I would suffice to say that even in the first quarter, while you see an 8-8.5% non-commission expense growth rate, excluding advertising and business development expenses, the non-commission expenses actually have grown at just about 3-4%. So we are comfortable with the level of expenses now in the context of the growth that we are seeing at this point of time.
And you can maintain that, like you can control that till the point you don't have a material savings growth. That is the
expectation, yes.
Understood. Perfect. Thanks. This is it from my side.
Thanks, Alish.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitesh Jain from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, sir. So on the margin front, what is the growth in savings business we are expecting, we are building in 21% margin for the full year?
So Nitesh, like I said, I'm not building in any growth as such. Even though my Q1 expense ratio has improved, in my margin for Q1, expense projection for full year are not assuming any improvement over last year.
Okay. So last year you have reported a expense overrun sort of thing of around 250 basis point. So
that was compared to the previous year. But I'm saying that right now we are not expecting it to improve from last year's expense ratios.
Yeah. So if there is an improvement in expense ratio, then your margins can further improve by 200 to 50 basis point, the expense overrun that we have witnessed last year, is it right or?
That is a function of how much we grow during the year, Nitesh.
Okay. Secondly, in your product mix, there is a others component. Is it reasonable to expect it's non-par guaranteed products?
In my product mix, there is a non-par. My others will be group funds business.
Others is group.
You're right. Yeah, this others includes non-par as well. This is, you're right, it's non-par. Non-par, yeah.
But it's retail in nature or it's a wholesale business?
This one is, this is also including group funds business. This is non-par retail plus group funds.
And sir, what are the trends on the surrenders? We have seen quite a bit of improvement in surrenders last year. How are the trends in Q1?
Surrender rates are not worsening. However, the pool of policies which are completing 5 years is increasing. So you should expect to see some increase in absolute surrenders, but there is no worsening trend of surrender rates.
Okay. Thank you, sir. That's it from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sanket Goda from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Just wanted to understand the protection margins, what we have reported. Is it because we have started selling a lot of limited paying protection plans where the persistency would be far better to a product which was a which was matched with the term plan, term of the contract? And also, is it that because we are able to sell more of riders on the savings plan, which is also driving our protection margins? That is my first question.
So, Sanket, we do not do too much of riders. It is still standalone protection. It is still dominated by normal term life. There is an element of critical illness that we sell with that. The growth is coming both from the growth in number of policies and sum assured, as well as some of the business coming from limited premium payment. Profitability difference wise, we do not expect a different persistency for limited pay as compared to a regular pay. In fact, between a limited pay and a regular pay for the same kind of a cover, absolute VNB will be consistent. But because the limited pay has higher premium, actually the margin in the limited pay will appear to be a lower percentage.
Okay, got it. And I mean, just want to reconfirm again, the cost assumptions which you are building when you reported this 21% margin is based on FY19 cost ratios, and also the other assumptions with respect to persistency and or mortality is also still based on FY19 numbers, right?
So expense is based on expectation of full year. What I also clarified is that it is not, we are not expecting an improvement from last year. That is what is in the forecast. With respect to your other question on persistency and other assumptions, there are no other assumption changes in the reporting for Q1.
Okay, so just to confirm again, your expectation what expense you will have in FY20 is being billed while reporting the margins, right?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Thank you. But generally we used to do that exercise in Q3. Have we changed this?
No. Every quarter until the last quarter is always based on projection for the rest of the year. The way it happens is Q1 I have one quarter actual, three quarters projection. Second H1 it becomes H1 plus one half year of projection and so on. So by the time we get to 9M, we have a closer view of where the full year could end up.
Okay, and our assumption is for FY20 is broadly similar to what we have experienced in FY19. That's the way we're trying.
In terms of ratio, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Perfect. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepika Mundra from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good evening. Thanks for taking my question. So on the product mix side, that given on the savings side, you're seeing starting to see some changes and diversification now. Is there a broad target in mind over the next 2-3 years between the mix between ULIP and other traditional or annuity products?
Deepika, it's like we have said earlier as well, we do not operate with an objective of mix. What is more important to us is a proper fit of product risk profile with customer risk profile. What we are doing more of is encouraging a distribution to reach out to customers who are even in the lower premium size segment, who we would expect to be more risk averse. And that's a segment where a par product is a more natural fit. There is no objective of mix. What we have clearly said as an objective is to grow the protection business faster than the rest of the business.
Understood. And so just any thoughts on basically the bank looking at adopting open architecture?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mayank B. from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I wanted to just understand growth from a number of policies perspective, because that's what you guys have also indicated that you want to focus on. So could you give some sense on the banca channel, what's been the level of growth in terms of policies also if you could give some sense on in terms of protection, what's been the growth in terms of policies, especially on retail protection?
So Mayank, we have not given out the number of policies growth. Again, the context in which we spoke about number of policies was more about diversification of customer segments. And like Kannan mentioned earlier, we continue on that path. It is still a gradual journey. We think it's more important to focus on absolute VNB growth. We think it's more important to focus on where the product mix ends up from the diversification of customers. So if I were to take the way the non-linked savings business has grown, to us that is also an indicator that the customer base that we are seeking to sell to is getting diversified. It doesn't necessarily need to be looked at only in the context of number of policies.
Right. Now, Satyan, what I'm trying to basically get to is trying to understand if you're sort of having some sort of cannibalization between the protection product and the ULIP product, especially on your banker channel.
Mind these are two very, very distinct needs, and my sense would be that one would not cannibalize the other.
All right. Harping back on the same question around your assumptions built into the VNB margin that you have indicated in this quarter. So since you're, just for clarification, since you're saying that you're building in the same expense ratio as FY19, in some sense, are you building in the same, what you're assuming for growth is the same level as what your OPEX is growing at currently? Can we
That's what it implicitly means.
Perfect. Great. Yeah. Thanks much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manish Shukla. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening and thank you for the opportunity. Satyan, first on slide 13, the point that you mentioned, others includes both retail and group. Can you split it approximately? How much of that other savings is retail and how much is group?
I think Manish, put together that is just about 3% of the product. I think it's safe to assume that it will be half and half in both. I don't think it's material in any sense.
But then it's combined is bigger than the annuity, which you said is growing at 70%. So it's in that sense material.
Yeah, yeah. The group funds business has grown strongly for us. But I'm saying in the overall context of APE contribution, that is not so material.
Okay, fair point. And just to reconfirm, the credit life is part of the group number that you report on the next slide, right?
So that is correct.
Average ticket size product-wise, will you be able to share it for the quarter?
We have not done that, Manish. We tend to do that on an annual basis.
Okay. Last question on surrenders. Surrender claims seem to have gone up 33% YOY for the quarter. What exactly is happening there?
So that's what I mentioned earlier, Manish. The underlying surrender rates have not changed. They are consistent with what we had at an improved level of last year. What is happening is that the pool of policies that have crossed 5 years has increased. So you should expect to see an increase in the surrender outgo. In any case, the rates of surrenders beyond 5 years that we are experiencing today are better than what we have assumed in the margin, even with the improvement that we took at the end of last year.
So is this a phenomena for a particular cohort for a quarter or two, or you expect this kind of trend to continue for some time?
So the absolute amount of surrender you see is about cohorts. As you get more cohorts which are going beyond 5 years, the absolute amount will change. But from a profitability perspective, the absolute amount is less relevant. The rate of the surrender is more important, which I am confirming to you is consistent with what we had last year.
Okay, got it. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thanks, Manish.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Udit Kariwala from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. My question is that, you know, the VNB margin has expanded by around 400 basis points over FY19. Now, the protection APE mix has again gone up by around 450-500 bips. But that was the case in FY19 over FY18 as well, 350 odd basis points. Now, what I understand is some bit of improvement has come because of the improvement in savings margins, and some could be because the PAR percentage has gone up. But since the change is so large, can you give us some color as to why the expansion is so large in this particular quarter compared to FY19 over FY18?
Even FY19 over FY18, while the mix expansion was large, the margin expansion on account of mix was still significant. What pulled us back was the margin loss because of worsening expense ratios. What we are seeing in this year is there is no expense ratio worsening. You are seeing the full impact of the product mix coming through. There is no other change in the assumptions.
Okay. And in terms of solvency, there is a slight improvement. Now, logically, if you are writing a higher proportion of protection business, ideally it should take some toll on solvency. Why would that go up?
What will drive the solvency ratio movements, you're right, will be driven in one part by the required capital, which protection takes up more of. The other part of it is also driven by available capital, which is profit net of dividend. In the first quarter of this year, we had no dividend outgo. The final dividend proposal for last year was approved at the AGM last week and will be an outflow in the second quarter. So what we are seeing for the first quarter is incremental required capital is being met by the incremental available capital coming out of the profits.
Okay, fair point. And last question I had was, as you explained about the margin, that it's more a lever on the expense. So is my understanding correct that what you're baking in is the expectation of FY20 expense, which would not be materially higher than what you saw in FY19 as a ratio?
Yeah, or lower.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hello. Hello.
Please go ahead, sir.
Next question.
No, we are waiting for the next question.
Mr. Toshniwal?
Hi. Am I audible?
Loud and
clear. Yes,
sir. Hi, sir. Two questions, sir. Again, I'll ask on the expense ratio. Just one thing I needed to understand. It's a very basic thing. So expense ratio for FY20 assumption is same as FY19, which basically means that if our savings business does not grow in absolute terms, then any increase in expenses in absolute terms is going to be a negative impact on the margins?
For the savings business, any expense growth will be negative. Like I said before, if I were to look at the first quarter expense increase, non-commission expense grew by 8%. Within that, advertising and business development was a large part. If I were to remove that, the growth in expense was just about 3-4%, which is in line with the overall APE growth.
Right, but when I look at the savings business per se, because that advertisement and business promotion cost, a part of it would have to be appropriated for savings business also.
No, but a bulk of it was actually incurred for protection.
Okay. So in any case, if for the full year, if I assume the savings business to be flat, then you think that we'll be able to maintain the full year OPEX expenses of that savings part at a flat level, or is it actually natural to see some increase in that segment because of the employee and the basic expenses?
Now, the objective is to keep it consistent. The impact that we had last year of negative impact, we do not want to let that repeat in this year.
Right. But at this point of time, we don't even expect a significant positive reversal of that also.
That will come. That is a matter of how the growth emerges over the rest of the year. We still have 9 months of the year to go. It is very hard to say what that will be for the rest of the year.
Okay. And one more question, sir, on the annuity. Now, so this is maybe on a specific date when we check the rates, but when I look at yours, HDFC and SBI Life's annuity rates being offered for maybe a similar kind of profile age and customer, then our rates were around 35-40 basis points higher. I understand there could be minute differences in the product granularities, but still 25-30 basis points higher annuity rate, is there something which we are gaining or our customer set is different?
No, I think the rates are fairly comparable. Typically, annuity prices change every month. There could be a lag effect in the change of price, but if I were to look at it over a longer period of time, you will find that our rates are fairly close to each other.
Okay, okay. And one more thing on the non-par return guarantee products. So I clearly understand that at this point of time, as you alluded, that you would remain cautious on that segment to grow very fast. But typically when I look the way things have evolved, for us, ULIP was always the primary product, but we remained cautious on annuity or the credit life in the early parts of the product life cycle, and maybe we had to ramp up on the other products gradually over a period of time. So are we very clear at this point of time that the non-par return guarantee product is not going to be one of our focus segments for the next 1.5-2 years, despite any kind of competition or pressure from the distribution channels?
Let me put it this way, Harshit. There are two dimensions. One is the business opportunity and the other is balance sheet risk. Balance sheet risk is usually one of appetite at a point of time given instruments that are available at that point of time. At least from our perspective, here and now, we are not convinced about investing appropriately in the longer term, so we have chosen to stay out of it. Should that situation change at any point of time? Again, we have said this in the past, the only thing which holds us back from that segment is the ability to manage the investment appropriately.
So I would supplement, you know, it's not as if we are saying nothing ever. It's simply depending on the prevailing market environment, depending on the prevailing interest rates, depending on the prevailing hedging instruments available, what we think we can appropriately manufacture, fulfilling a certain customer need, we do. So for example, annuities, as you mentioned earlier, we do have, but we price it according to what we think is appropriate and that can be hedged. Similarly, non-par saving instrument, not that we don't have, we do have a non-par saving instrument, but we price it where we think we can hedge. And that is how our philosophy will remain.
Okay. So the hedging instruments at this point of time are very, as to what we get from the different market sources, that it's more again the portfolio level hedging through the cash flows of different short-term products. If that remains same, the kind of hedging instruments which are available at this point of time, we are reasonably sure that we won't enter into this segment. And as you rightly mentioned, that balance sheet risk in this segment is relatively much higher. So at least we cannot expect that in the next 1 year. And that's why actually if you can break up the others, it is going to be much more clear to track that segment's growth also.
No, again, actually, like I said, even if it is 1.5% of the new business, it's not really that material. Like Puneet said, it is not like we do not have a product. We have a product. That is not a product which guarantees income for life. It offers a lump sum on maturity. The level of guarantee there is lower than what we are comfortable with at this point of time. And it does sell to a limited extent. It's not like it doesn't sell at all. With respect to the view of what are the various ways of hedging, I'm not so sure how others do it. It is for them to comment on. I'm not speaking about that. But as and when we are comfortable with the way of investing it, we will do it.
Okay, sir. And on bancassurance, when we look at the growth...
Mr. Dashniwal, I'm sorry to interrupt. I would request you to come down to the queue.
Sure. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vinod Rajamani from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. So this target that you have set as far as the VNB growth is concerned, over the next 2-3 years, there is doubling of VNB. What is it predicated on? I just wanted to understand, what are you predicating this on? Is it a particular product mix? Is it a particular distribution mix? What is the underlying basis to your you know, these growth estimates for VNB?
So Vinod, I'll go back to what I said before. The four P's are what the drivers will be. As a starting point, you will recollect that for full year last year, 60% of the overall VNB came from protection. And therefore, a meaningful part of that aspiration of doubling the VNB over 3 to 4 years will be led also by the way protection grows. But once again, like I said before, over the 3 to 4 year period, it is not going to be one parameter which will do it. It will be a combination of all the four P's which will have to take us there.
Sure. Understood. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sanket Goda from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for giving the opportunity again. Just want to clarify, now the protection contributes around 14.6 to our entire APE. And as Q2, Q3, Q4 are relatively more seasonally strong for saving business, assume overall protection contributions falls to somewhere around 12.5 compared to what we have done at 14.6. Then can we assume that the margins, means if the cost remains true to the what you have assumed, then the margins will moderate to around 19-odd% or there will be moderation in the margins because of increasing the contribution of savings in subsequent quarters?
I can't comment on where the margin for the full year will end up being because as we go through the rest of the year, yes, you're right, there is more seasonality in the savings business, so the mix of protection will be a determinant. But equally also within savings, the product mix will be a determinant. Equally also the growth and the corresponding expense ratio will be a determinant. And equally also at the end of the year, whatever are the opportunities of improving assumptions will be a determinant of where the margin will end up being. But more important to us is the absolute VNB growth that we are aspiring for.
Yeah, got it. But just assuming that we maintain the same assumptions, last year we reported savings margins of around 7.6% and protection closer to 110. So if I assume those remain true for the entire year of FY20, and the savings contributions definitely will be better in the subsequent quarters. So we see that the margins should moderate with the similar assumptions, I mean to say.
And again, like I said, if the situation is what you said, that the protection growth becomes less, of course the margin will go down. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that for the rest of the year, even without a change in any other assumptions, the contribution of unit-linked and the non-linked business in terms of product mix will also determine margins. The growth and therefore the unit cost will also determine margins. And that's why I'm not really expressing a point of view on what the margin will be at the end of the year. Our endeavor is not to let the margin drop.
Okay, got it. And one last thing. So what are the cost ratio growth we have seen, OPEX ratio other than the commissions? So the bulk of the cost growth, incremental cost growth, has been more allocated towards protection rather than savings. Therefore, see, we are seeing an improvement in the savings cost ratios, but probably that extra cost we have incurred incrementally is being more towards the protection and to drive that growth. So is it a fair assumption to make?
That is correct. Because at the end of the day, the protection margins that we have is after the actual higher costs incurred in procuring the protection business.
Okay, got it. Thanks, Satya.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nidesh Jain from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, sir, again. So, sir, how much of growth impact is probably due to our focusing lot more on cost? So do you think is it also impacting our incremental growth because we are focusing on controlling costs in the savings business?
I can assure you that at this stage of the company growing, we will not do such a thing of curtailing the growth by underinvesting. We will never do that.
And secondly, in last 1 year and these 3 months, we have lost quite a bit of market share. By when do you think this strategy of broad-basing customers stabilize and we again continue to sustain or try to increase market share from these levels?
So, Nilesh, the way we see it is market share is an outcome of everything that we do. The outcome that we are targeting currently and are wholly and solely focused on is what we told you all, which is doubling VNB in 3 to 4 years. To do that, all the steps, and we have discussed several times also over the course of this call, we are taking all possible steps to do that. As a consequence of that, whatever market share emerges, so be it.
Okay, that's it from my side.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Keshav Binani from HDFC Securities. Please go ahead. Mr. Binani, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Madhukar here, Madhukar Lata here from HDFC Securities. A couple of quick questions. One, can you enumerate the percentage of the contributors to margin change between, operating leverage and mix change and any assumption change?
Madhukar, like I said before, the only contributor is product mix. We have not anticipated any operating leverage improvement. We are still basing our margins on a projection of full year costs, which is not assuming any productivity improvement.
And the assumption change we do at the end of the year. We don't do in the middle of the year.
Right. So, does this mean that the current cost ratio improvement 17.5 to 17 in the first quarter is not getting factored in this margin? So that's an additional buffer that you have going forward.
Madhukar, again, sometimes it's not so easy to translate the overall cost ratio directly into margin outcomes, because the cost ratio is for both savings and protection together, and there is a relative contribution of the two. Also, the cost ratio is the cost divided by total weighted premium. Assumptions are expressed as a combination of a variety of cost elements. But what the cost ratio indicates is whether there is a sequential deterioration of productivity or not. And therefore, to that extent, what we are seeing for Q1 is we are not seeing any deterioration. And that's what we are looking at for the rest of the year.
Okay.
Madhukar, I'm sorry to interrupt. I would request you to come down to the queue. Thank you. Move to the next question, which is from the line of Neeraj Toshniwal from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Hi, congrats on good set of numbers. Just wanted to have some color that you had a very strong run rate in terms of protection last year in second and the third quarter. And so what kind of run rate we are building on from here on, because we had very strong first quarter as well. Because as I assume, savings will pick up from the second, third quarter because of seasonality and you will also improve due to market conditions. So where is the landing up of the margin? What kind of profiling we are doing in terms of margin? Are we able to sustain this 21% or what is it, what we are building into in terms of the margin, if that you can help me with?
Again, from a margin, it is not as if we build in any product mix on that. What is emerging in the margin is the actual product mix that we are seeing for the quarter. Like I said before, the final outcome of margin for the year will also be a function of the other element that I spoke about. Mix within savings, efficiency through growth, as well as any assumption changes that we may choose to take at the end of the year. And like I also said, our endeavor is to not let it drop.
So, but any protection run rate we have factored in terms of growth that we want to achieve, because savings would be anyways much lower than the protection, but any run rate to any target we are having, internal target in terms of protection?
See, the idea is, as we have been doing, simply to maximize the opportunity that is there. Obviously, the growth rate of protection will be significantly higher than saving, but beyond that, there is no particular target.
Okay. And in terms of annuity business, are we having any thoughts on how much we want to scale up that business?
Actually, it's the same answer. We will try to maximize the opportunity. We don't have any particular target. As you saw this quarter, annuity business grew at about 70%. Obviously, it is still on a low base. As the base grows, maybe it will moderate, but we clearly see significant opportunity there. As long as the opportunity exists and as long as we are able to manage the risk, we will continue to exploit.
And we also have a great strategic advantage in terms of synergizing with our subsidiary. As you know, the subsidiary, 100% subsidiary, is doing the pension fund management business, and that has also scaled up over the last year and this year as well. So that synergy also will be taken advantage of as we move forward for this retirement businesses.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pawan Kumar from, Pawan Kumar, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
So thank you for the opportunity. In the with regards to the unrealized and realized gains, the gains have moved from 10.8% loss in FY19 Q1 to 12% gain in FY20, just the unrealized portion of the gains. Can you explain the movement?
Pawan, all of the unrealized gains or losses that you see in the financials are in the unit-linked business. In this segment of business, all gains go back to the customer and it has no impact on the P&L as an outcome. So to that extent, the gains or losses that you see arise from two factors, of course, the equity market and the interest rate movement. Within a unit link portfolio, roughly about 45% to 50% is in fixed income and the rest is in equity. So the movement in market is what actually comes out in the unrealized gain.
So just to interrupt, these are non-linked ones I'm talking about?
Non-linked, there will be no unrealized gains in the book. There will be realized gains. Unrealized will not be there. Realized gains can happen in certain portfolios. These are typically the participating book where 90% of the investment gains go back to the customer.
Got it. So another question in terms of the internal, you mentioned in one of the earlier questions that there are internal hedges available against mortality and morbidity assumptions that are built in. What are these? Can you please explain?
So what Puneet was referring to is when I'm looking at term insurance, which is mortality, and annuities, which is longevity. What you have is if you have improvement in mortality, then your term life claims will be lesser. But against that, what you will have is that your annuity claims will be more and vice versa. So directionally, worsening mortality will help annuities, improving mortality will help assurance. And therefore, directionally, these two are in a way a hedge.
Thank you, sir. One last question, if I may.
Sir, I'm sorry to interrupt. I will request you to come down to the queue.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, we take the last two questions. The next question is from the line of Arjun Narayan from Spark Capital. Please go ahead. Mr. Arjun Narayan. Mr. Narayan, we would request you to unmute your line from the handset and go ahead with the question. As there is no response, we would move to the next question, which is from the line of Prateek Poddar from Reliance Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So just I just got a bit confused between your product mix strategy. Could you just re-articulate? Is there a shift from what earlier was the focus of ULIP and protection to more granularization within the savings business also? Is that what you're trying to hint at?
No, what we have articulated over the last two or three quarters is we do not have a product mix target. But what we are attempting to do is expand the base of customers that we are able to address. Typically, in the past, in the unit-linked business, with our significantly higher ticket size, we were primarily focused at the more affluent customer segment.
the attempt is to diversify to the other segments as well, which is the mass and the mass affluent. As we go into these segments, the more natural fit for some of these segments is some of the other product categories, which is leading to some of the product mix changes that you are seeing. This is within the saving segment. Protection, of course, is a category which is different, and there our attempt is to try and maximize the potential that exists.
But that's the other way of saying that, you know, different customers would have different set of requirements, and hence the product mix is getting granularized, right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so then I can assume that as you go down the curve in terms of customer income profile, their requirement would be different from, say, a ULIP, maybe towards a par, non-par, or annuity, or whatever it is. And hence, you would try to sell that, right?
Quite possible, yes.
Yeah, that is okay. What has happened also. If you look at the first quarter product mix, so that's what exactly happened. In terms of ULIP, from the peak of 85%, actually we've been able to swing it within a short period of time to 71%.
Yeah.
And if you look at the PAR, it has gone up to about 10%. And as Puneet mentioned, the annuity has been growing at the 70% growth, and protection has become 14.6%. So it's pretty much, you know, within a short period of time, we've been able to navigate and swing it quite a bit.
And so this product mix change, which channel is driving it? Is it, I mean, when I look at your channel mix, I see a sharp increase in agency, direct, corporate and group. So which is it, like all the other channels apart from banca which are driving this change? That is one. And just to supplement, what, when you say group channel, what does that mean? Just could you just clarify on that?
So in fact, you know, if you look at the group point, Satyan can answer. But if you really look at the channel mix perspective, yes, there also we have been able to granularize it. But you know, the PAR products typically get sold in non-bank channels. That is the way we have seen that emerge. But I want to tell you that protection, even the bank channels are doing big time the protection business, because they feel that for their customers, including ICICI Bank, that protection is a great value add for their customers. So they are selling it big time. In fact, they are selling more than what we ourselves have anticipated. So that is the way I can give a color in terms of the you know, how individual channels are emerging in terms of product mix.
And the group business is coming from two parts. One is credit life on the protection side, and employer or other group term covers that are there. And the second is group funds business, which is a smaller portion of the business.
And sir, banca is only ICICI Bank, right?
No, we have about 13-14 bank partners with us, and you know, for
split
example.
That? Split it? How much is others?
No, we have given it in a different way. We have said that non-promoter channels account for about...
Non-bank is 48% of the mix. Bank insurance overall is 52%. This includes... ICICI Bank is the largest. Standard Chartered is the second largest. And then we have a set of almost a dozen other banks which contribute less,
including cooperative banks.
But between ICICI and Standard Chartered, a bulk of the bank insurance contribution comes out.
But okay, I understand. And over there also, your strategy is to granularize, as in lower your dependence on ICICI Bank?
No, we are happy for them to distribute. It's not that we will just, you know, perforce, we will reduce their... you know, dependence, but the, you know, in terms of the mix, there has been a change because they are doing much more protection now. That's why you've seen the channel mix the way it is emerging.
ICICI Bank doing, that is the reason why, because it's based on APE, and that is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, it's not based, I mean, based on APE, yes, but largely we sell only regular premium products. So whether it is savings or otherwise, we sell largely the regular premium products.
Understood. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we take the one last question for today. And for the rest who are pending in the question queue, we would request you to connect offline. We take one last question, which is from the line of Sandeep Jain from Birla Sun Life Insurance. Please go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. So, just to this thing, we are increasing our protection business, and the solvency ratio is currently out somewhere around 217%. So, as an internal target and all, where we want to raise the capital? Because if we increase the protection business, and what is our product mix which we are targeting, whatever? So, is it 6 to 9 months or probably a year kind of thing?
If I were to look at capital, you're right.
because we are growing protection at this pace, it consumes more capital. But our comfort level is determined more by economic capital. While our statutory solvency position is a solvency ratio of about 217%, on an economic capital basis, it is far better. We think that over the near term, over the next 3 to 4 years, our needs for capital can be met through a combination of internal accruals coming from profits, potential dividend policy action, if necessary, tier 2 capital. We don't think we will need to raise further equity capital over the next 3 to 4 years to manage the solvency arising from growth.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would like to hand the conference over to Mr. N.S. Kannan for closing comments.
Yeah, thank you once again. It was a long call, and thank you for being patient and ask questions. And, you know, my team and I are available for taking any questions offline. Thank you very much and good night.
Thank you. On behalf of ICICI Prudential Life Insurance, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.